ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Things are to make an organization orderly takes a lot of thought, and a lot of little battles have to be fought and won, and establish certain standards. So I definitely feel it when I come back here, that lot's in place. Of course, there's a lot that's not, too, that opportunity for the future. So thank you for coming down. We just had a marathon week of going to the corporate world. We were at, earlier in the weekend, Intel, and then we went to Salesforce yesterday and Google today to do presentations, and find the people to be very receptive. In fact, we were just discussing on the way over that many of the corporations now are putting a lot of resources into volunteer work, giving away some of their profits for social welfare programs, not social welfare, but to do good for others and so forth. It's something that's on people's mind, is how to do service. Mark Benioff, who started the Salesforce company, who's the CEO there, had some spiritual association early on and thought about ways in which he could proactively give things away and do service. It's what people are actually looking for, is a way to be spiritual and happy. So Krishna consciousness, really, as Mukharvind Prabhu was pointing out on the way over here, starts from the highest level in the Srimad Bhagavatam, saying that unless you're doing selfless service for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which takes a little explaining how that's also service for everyone, because he's the root of others, is the highest standard of life. Dharma projita kaitavo traparamo nirmatsaranam satam. That the Bhagavatam starts by saying that we give up all other kinds of motives, which are, it calls cheating, and doesn't nourish the human spirit, but selfless service to the Supreme is perfect alignment with our nature, and it actually is the goal of life, and it's completely satisfying. So one of the ways to serve Krishna in the list of various services is to hear and chant about him. So this space here at ISV was created specifically so that we could come and in a safe environment here and chant about Krishna. So when my drum comes back, we'll try that, starting with some chanting. How is everybody? Yeah, what's good? Name one thing. Bring the mics out, we want to hear this.
We're here to listen about
Gita. Well done. Everyone else okay? There's more to it. You can unpack it.
Yeah. Same for me as well, whatever she said.
Okay, whatever she said?
Yeah.
And you want to say more, or he wants you to say more.
Well, by Krishna's mercy, we moved a year ago to North Bay, and
North Bay means?
Vallejo.
Yeah.
And the last time we saw you, we expressed the desire to move closer, and thankfully we moved just a couple weeks ago, 20 minutes from the temple.
Last week. Congratulations and welcome. Yes, thank you very much. Yeah, it's no small feat to be here on a Wednesday night. Because going through traffic from the North Bay would be like putting a man on the moon. You'd have to train for it for maybe 5 or 10 years. to make that kind of a journey. But 20 minutes, that's nice. That's really nice. Excellent. Everyone else okay? Better than okay. So we're just in Mayapur, and the devotees there have a special austerity, like they like to perform, which is going on in Navadvip Dham Parikrama. It looks like one of the most austere things you could possibly do. They get a huge truck, and people bring all their possessions that they're going to bring on the Parikrama. They put them in buckets, and then they write their name on it, and they throw it in a big pile. And then they throw all the buckets onto the back of the truck. And they drive somewhere where they're going to camp for the night, and they throw all the buckets off the truck, and everyone comes and picks up their bucket. They know it's there because it has their name on it. And the material world goes on like this too. It's like a big truck. And everyone brings with them this little bucket of desires. And that, even at the time when everything gets amalgamated at the end, this is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, how the material world is being manifest, and then it becomes unmanifest again. Things merge back into the Mahavishnu. And they come back out again. But when they do, even though they've all been merged together, you still get your little packet back. Asau gunamayer bhaver bhuta sukshmendriyatma bhi sa nirmiteshu nirvishto bhunte bhutech jutad gunan. Suta Goswami says in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the second chapter of the first canto, that at the beginning of creation, the Lord enters into the creation and makes sure you get your little packet back. Whatever little bucket of stuff you had during the last creation, you get it back again. So we carry with us from one body to the next the spool of various desires that we have to experience the material world in various ways. This is something that Krishna describes in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, in which he describes the subtle nature of us moving from one body to the next. Shariram yaravapnoti yachap yukramatishvara. Let me start over. Shariram yaravapnoti. Now I'm really off track. Shariram yaravapnoti yachap yukyamatishvara grihitvaitani samyati vayur gandam ivashayat. Something like that. So, shariram yaravapnoti yach chak yukramatishvaraha. When you leave the body, then you have a kind of a scent to you. Every living entity has a certain kind of scent. And, I mean, you could pick it up. If you, if somebody's been eating a lot of garlic and they walk past you, you go, whoa! What was that? You can smell it because it comes out of your pores. Similarly, our desires come out of our pores too. And you know, you can sense somebody because we're very subtle. We can sense people's intentions and desires and so forth. Material nature is very subtle. It operates from a very subtle level. So whatever kind of scent we're emanating. That's why they don't let us in the spiritual world. We don't smell right. It's because the desires aren't in tune. You have to become sweet. Everyone's sweet in the spiritual world. Shriya kanta kanta paramapurusha kalpataravo drumabhum yishchintam aniganamayi toyamamritam kataganam natyam gamanam apivamshi priyasaki. It's describing how that everyone, because they're pure, they have no inhibition for dancing and singing pure songs about the Lord in the spiritual world. So spiritual life really means to become purified. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Yesham twantakatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvandva mohanir mukta bhajanti mam dridavrta. In order to be very determined in the practice of devotional service, one has to achieve a certain level of purification. And it's also mentioned in the Narada Pancharatra, sarvapati vanir muktam tatpratvena nirmalam hrishikena hrishikesha sevanam bhaktirutamam. There's a way in which by practicing the tenets of bhakti, that one purifies one's senses. And when the senses become purified, then when they achieve their real nature, they become sweet. And one can then utilize them steadily in the service of the Lord. So, shariram yaravapnoti yat shap yukramatishvara grihit vaitani samyati vayur gandham ivashaya. Just as when the air passes over various substances, it picks them up. So, in moving about this world, I pick up various kinds of consciousness. And then, ukramantam stitam vapi bunjanam bhagunanvitam vimudanana pashanti pashanti jnana chakshusha. When I leave the body, ukramantam, which means I step out of here, and I'm headed for a new destination, which comes by daiva netrena. It gets decided upon by a higher authority. Ukramantam stitam vapi bunjanam bhagunanvitam. If you've studied the science of Krishna consciousness, you can see what's happening. And if you haven't, then you have no idea what's happening. It's very confusing and scary. So it's important to know what's going on. And so Krishna informs us of this subtle process that we go through, carrying with us our various package of desires. And even though we may change bodies in the material world, you get a whole new body after this one. You keep the subtle body, which is that little packet of goods you have that you carry around with you. It's got your name on it, and it shows up again when you come to the next body. And you take up with the kinds of desires, aspirations that you had in your last life, and a situation that is custom-made for you because of the situation, the momentum you had from your last life. That, Krishna says, is shotram chakshu sparshanam cha rasanam grahanam eva cha adishtayam manaschayam vishayan upasevate. So he's naming how you get a certain kind of ear, and you get a certain kind of eye and nose and sense of touch. These are all very valuable, these senses, because especially in the human form of life, it's described as a very rare. Labvam sudulamabhidam bahusam bhavante. To get the human life, you have to go through many other kind of species. And then when you get the human life, it's especially equipped. The eyes, the ears, the nose, they're all equipped around the mind so that you can understand the absolute truth. If you get rabbit ears, they may look cute. But even though they stick up like that, rabbits, they're not interested in Srimad Bhagavatam. They're interested in chewing on stuff. They'll chew everything, furniture, whatever. They look all cute and nice, but actually they bite. Nothing against rabbits. But they can't understand Bhagavatam and all the other kinds of species either. They get all kinds of combinations and permutations of senses to try to enjoy the world from every different angle. There's a weird thing about sense gratification. Once you try it, and you get a little bit of a taste from it, and then the taste wears off. So you got to try it a little differently the next time from every different combination that you can. I mean, otherwise there'd just be one flavor of ice cream, vanilla. But then it was a big thing, vanilla, then there's chocolate, and then when I was a kid, there was 31 flavors, if I remember the number correctly. It was called Baskin-Robbins. And everyone freaked out. There's so many varieties. Try 8,400,000 flavors. That's the idea, that you get to explore and try all different combinations of permutations, but unfortunately, it's the same thing over and over again, just repackaged in different ways. Same hearing, only just like slightly, you know, try it like this, try it like that, try it like a rabbit, try it like a fox, try it like a mongoose. Whatever it is, you get different kinds of combinations. And in that way, you could try to taste something in the material world. But it's only after understanding that these tastes are all the same thing. They're just repackaged, recycled over and over again. And with some good fortune, one comes to understand that this is a futile attempt. So one can then inquire about a higher mode of happiness. Not only that, in the human form of life, we have a sense for inquiring about God, that there is something more. This comes as a natural sense, just as much as a coyote has a natural sense, can hear from a long distance away, or a hound can smell. And really, they keep him at the airport. I saw at the international terminal, they keep this hound dog out there. And when people just walk by, the dog can smell whether you're up to some mischief or not. If you got something in your bag, they know from a mile away. I got stopped in Mexico because somebody gave me a sandwich. It had a tomato in it. One little piece of tomato, and that beagle came over and stuck his nose in my bag. And they said, okay, what do you got in there? I got a citation for having a tomato slice. They can smell it from so far away. The human sense is they can sense that there's a God. There's a sense that there is a supreme. And then everything becomes available to one who then endeavors for it. If you just try for it, then there's an abundance of information and guides that will avail themselves to those who ask the question, how do I understand this a little bit more? That's the purpose of the human form of life. In fact, Bhagavatam says, just try to live in such a way that you keep clear of a lot of disturbance so that you can keep inquiring and you can make a deep research into the absolute truth. Then you'll be happy. And you'll be successful. There's a great need in human society otherwise. All the different kinds of books that people get, if they don't have this kind of information in them, they become really a source of frustration. Because it seems like it should satisfy you getting knowledge, but until it reaches a certain threshold, that is, starts describing actually what is the supreme, and giving some details about it, then it disturbs the mind. Narada Muni says this to Srila Vyasadeva. He said, unless you actually describe, you go past this threshold, about the material world, it's just absolutely useless, ultimately, in the scheme of things. But even, he said, if you describe Brahman, but you don't describe the details of the Supreme, the source of Brahman, Krishna. Brahmano hi pratishtha hum amritasya vyasya cha shashvatasya tadarmasya sukhasya ikantikasya cha. Krishna says, Brahman and all the other features of the Supreme come from me. They emanate from me. So unless you give a description of who that person is, what his qualities and characteristics are, what he looks like and so forth, then Narada Muni says, it'll be unsatisfying, and it's not very beautiful. Naish karmyam apyachuta bhava varjitam nashobate gyanam alam niranjanam kutakpuna shashvara padramishvare nacharpitam karma yadapyakaranam. Narada says this to Vyasadeva. He says, naish karmyam, there is a way of which one can come to the end of trying to enjoy the combinations and permutations of matter and be very determined about it and perform austerities and so forth and come to a sense of self-realization, aham brahmasmi, I'm not matter but I'm spirit. But he says, naish karmyam apyachuta bhava varjitam nashobade gyanam. If it doesn't include knowledge about achuta, who's achuta? Chitta means Krishna, the infallible chitta bhava. And if unless you have a sense of feeling for a chitta bhava, nishobate, it doesn't look very nice. That's not beautiful. It's not satisfying. Nishobate jnanam alam niranjanam kutakpunashta te. He says, what to speak of? Kutakpunashta, that if you engage in material activities, in material research, what to speak of that, he says. Because that is simply leads you back into the mire of suffering in the material world. So there's a standard of beauty and knowledge that is satisfying to the self, and that's presented in Srimad Bhagavatam. It has to come to the point of understanding the concept of Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that there's several aspects Krishna mentions. Now, I think we went from freezing cold to somebody turned up the heat until it's the Sahara Desert, so we got to be a little careful about Sahara territory because then everyone goes to sleep. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, bhoktaram jagatapasam. So one thing is to understand that Krishna has senses, and his senses are the source of everybody else's senses. So I'm an anga or a part of Krishna, and when Krishna's senses are satisfied, then my senses become satisfied. That's an important point, because then you can use your energies properly in life. And this is something that Prahlad Maharaj mentions, naivatmana prabhurayam nijalabhapurno manam janada vidusat karano vranite. He says that Krishna doesn't need our offerings because he's self-sufficient. Naivatmana prabhurayam nijalabhapurno. He's perfect in himself, nijalabha. He doesn't gain anything from us because he's purno. He's perfect and complete. As we know, Om Purnam Adah Purnam Idam Purnat Purnam Udachite. It describes the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, in the Ishupanishad. Beautiful verse. The Personality of Godhead is perfect and complete. And because he is completely perfect, all emanations from him, such as this phenomenal world, are perfectly equipped to his complete wholes. Whatever emanates from the complete wholes, complete in itself, even though he's the complete whole, even though so many complete units emanate from him, he remains the complete balance. And so this prayer by Prahlad Maharaj, in this prayer, he says that you should understand that when you give something to satisfy the senses of Bhagavan, then it's you who get the benefit. That's a great algorithm to understand. If you get the wrong algorithm in life, you just go to hell faster. And if you get the right algorithm, then you can speed up the process of actually enjoying real life. And so this is an algorithm. Understand the fact that when whatever you get, you offer it to Krishna to please his senses. And when you can do that, then you become satisfied. Does that make sense? In the worldly context, it doesn't really make sense, because the more I give away to somebody else, it's survival of the fittest. And I have to take from other people in order for me to be satisfied. My senses are not satisfied when people get more than I do. Correct? This is called jivo jivasya jivanam. This is the corporate motto, that one living being is food for another. So, hastani sahastanam aparani chatushpadam palguni tatra mahatam jivo jivasya jivanam. I believe it's the sages at Naimasaranya say this, that that one, there are different levels of beings, and when those are higher beings, they feed off the other lower beings. And in this way, they say jivo jivasya jivanam, one living entity is food for another. And so I struggle here in the material world with this sense of competition against all other living beings. And not only that, I can't satisfy my senses, because no matter how much I take, I don't ultimately feel satisfied. There's a saturation point, and the sense gratification wears off. I can't get the same effect that I did the last time, so I try for more. And when I take more, I get sick. So that's a problem. However, Prahlad Maharaj says, the more you offer Krishna, the more you become decorated. For instance, he gives this analogy that if you decorate your face really nicely in the mirror, you look in the mirror, decorate your face, and then you look in the mirror and go, oh, look, the image in the mirror is decorated too. So he compares us to, as parts and parcels of Krishna, to that reflection in the mirror. So that when you decorate Krishna, then you naturally feel and are decorated. You're satisfied. That's an important concept. Because if I miss that, then I really can't be happy. So Bhoktaram Yagyatapasam means like to understand that Krishna is the enjoyer. And that when he enjoys, then I enjoy. So that's why devotees are always feeding Krishna. It's natural. And they're dressing him, and they're thinking, you know, what to bring to Krishna. Everything goes to Krishna. Not only that, he can take it. That's what the supreme enjoyer means. I mean, you know, if you go to somebody's house, and they cook a big meal, and then he's like, just give me half a chapati. I don't want anything else. You're like, dang, this guy's a real, you know, don't invite him over anymore. He can't eat, you know. Why do we cook for this person that can't eat anything? But Krishna, you could keep feeding him. He'll keep eating. Give me more. He'll keep taking more and more. And, you know, not everybody can accept offerings because they can't digest it. And that's unsatisfying for us to give to somebody who can't take it. An astrologer once told me to give away items of cloth to homeless people. On a certain day, I just happened to be there that day anyway, doing Sankirtan. So I took some. They were old clothes, but they were pretty nice, I must say. They weren't worn out or anything. I had a few jackets, and they said, "Give it to homeless people." So I went around and tried to give it to the homeless, and they didn't want it. I was shocked. They said, "Get out of here!" One guy told me, "Get out of here!" You know, I was like, "Come on, I'm benevolent, you know." And you're supposed to accept charity from a benevolent person. He's like, I don't even like you. You know, go away. But Krishna doesn't do that. He accepts. In the Bhagavad Gita, he says that whatever you eat, whatever you offer, give away, give it to me. I'll take it. Yeah, I'll take it, whatever it is. And that's the beginning stage when he says that. He says, yet koroshi arashnashi as johasi dadasi yet yatapasasi kuntiyat tat kurusha marapranam. Whatever you're doing now, just offer it to me. I can take it. I can digest it. And so then you'll actually feel when you give to Krishna, then it comes back. It nourishes you. You feel happy that he took it. So we really want to give to somebody who can appreciate. And then the other principle is to understand who owns everything. So Bhumi talks about this in the Srimad Bhagavatam. She's earth. She's worshipable deity. In fact, first thing I say every morning before I step out of bed or off the floor, wherever I may be, is please, my dear Mother Bhumi, please forgive me for stepping on your surface. And put my left foot down on the floor and then offer my obeisance to my spiritual master. And remember Bhumi, she's supporting us. And when we sit down in a seat, before we offer puja, we offer a little puja to the seat and also to Bhumi for supporting us. And there she is in the Srimad Bhagavatam speaking for herself from her own perspective. And she says that it's really insanity what's going on the planet Earth. And I'm not talking about right now. Although I am, I mean, obviously. But it's always like this. And Bhumi sees it, you know, for millions of years, because she's always here. And she sees these people coming onto the planet, and they're arguing over property lines. And who gets what property line? She says, what difference does it make? You're only here for 2 minutes. Why are you fighting each other? You know, there's the Hatfields and the McCoys. There are infamous two families who break up and they live next to each other and they just feud their whole lives. And then you got countries that are always fighting against each other. And the political boundaries are always changing. And this is, it comes to the point of people spilling blood over this is my land, that's your land. And so from her perspective, it's like, you people are insane. You're just passing through, and how do you think anything belongs to you at all? What to speak of the oceans, dividing up the oceans, saying this belongs to me. And so she's astounded at the stupidity of the human beings. So to not be stupid is a great trick in life. And Krishna teaches this. He says, just if you don't want to be in the category of the dumbest of the dumb, or as probably you say, rascal number one, then consider that everything, Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, everything belongs to the Ishvara, Krishna. It doesn't belong to me. That really just makes sense. And if one takes on this vision that is offered in the Sri Upanishad, verse please, give him the mic. Hopefully you were listening. Is the mic there? Starts with an I. It's the first verse.
Ishavasya.
Go ahead.
Ishavasya idam sarvam yat kincha jagatyam jagat tena tyaktena bhunjita magrida kashi siddhanam.
Can you give us a general idea of the meaning?
I think it goes along the lines of to understand that everything is the Supreme Lord's and we should just accept what is set aside as our quota.
That's correct. Yeah, that's called sanity. Ishavasyam idang sarvam. So everything belongs to Isha or Krishna, Bhagavan. He owns everything. And that solves a lot of problems in life. Ishavasyam idang sarvam yat kincha jagatyam jagat. So everything animate or inanimate within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. Tena tyaktena bunjita. That's in one line a prescription of how one can live a healthy, balanced life without being a mad person. And that is tena tyaktena. Move it down to the word for word, please. So you have tena, by him, the Lord, tyaktena, set apart quota. You know, tyaktena, he put aside for you. Bunjita, you should accept. So you should accept those things which are set aside, obviously, as your quota, and not accept other things because they belong to God. So that's the second principle. And the third principle is to understand that Bhagavan, Krishna, is the supreme friend. Suridam Sarvabhutanam means that he's the friend of every living entity. And he is our ultimate well-wisher. And if we would find out what it is that he suggests that we do, then we'll never be misguided or disappointed by taking his advice and following it. Because he's given it in such a way that we can ultimately be benefited and benefit other people. So that's how to be happy in life. And those are a few thoughts, so we'll take a few reflections. Purpose of the reflections will expand and deepen the conversation. Go right ahead. Nam Smaranam.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. Tena taktena bhunjita. So Lord Krishna has set aside something as our quota. How do we judge that, you know, this only this much is my quota and, you know, not endeavor for more? Thinking that, oh, more is my quota.
Well, you should take what you need. Kamasya nendriya prithir labha jivati eva. Definitely you shouldn't live to overwhelm the senses or to try to become more and more comfortable. But take as much as you need to live a healthy life. And that's something that requires a little common sense. Like don't eat too much, don't eat too little. And eat the kinds of things that are naturally provided for you, you know, so you can be healthy. And the point is how you can achieve that balance so that you can have full vigor for pursuing your spiritual life. That's the point. So if you get too many things, then you become weighed down by them and distracted. If you get too little, too few things, then it's you may be inconvenienced to the point where you'll be distracted. So the point is to find that point at which you can utilize the things that you have around them and that they're serving the purpose of self-realization. That's one of the tests. You can see what you need. Because some people need more. Like kings, they may need more for their service. King has to live in a more centralized place amongst the people and needs a few more facilities than other people. But we have the example in the Srimad Bhagavatam of kings who were saintly and they just used everything for Krishna's service. So if you find that things are distracting you from your service, then you know you can winnow out some of those things. Prabhupada gives the example in the purport for that verse in the Sri Upanishad that in a natural way, human beings are meant to digest simple kinds of foods, not meant to eat a lot of meat. At least he makes that argument, you know, that the teeth aren't really cutting teeth like tiger's teeth. So you can kind of look at the natural course of things. A tiger has a quota of fresh meat. He can digest it. His digestive tract is shorter. Things like that are kind of built into nature. You can observe, you know, what's your kind of food and how much you need and so forth. Sociological studies show that people don't need an excess. Well, there's a certain amount, for instance, of income you need to get the kinds of things that keep your body and soul together. So, but past that, it doesn't really add much to your life. Just more anxiety collecting money. Somebody else had their hand up. Yes, yeah, Sundar Prabhu. And then back to Shraddha for the internet.
Like the point about how you were talking about satisfying Krishna's senses and that he is a supreme enjoyer, and in one sense he is a real enjoyer because we may not even be able to and you gave a very nice example of how Krishna can take any of the offering from his devotees whereas we are limited in our capacity to even enjoy or try to enjoy.
Yeah, and we're limited in our capacity to be the friend of everyone. This is something that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and also Srila Prabhupada used to point out when people would talk about doing philanthropy, and he would ask them, what can you really do to help people? Or what can you really do to help animals? When I was a kid, there was an oil spill in the San Francisco Bay. So a group of us kids got together and we went down there to save birds. And we were pulling seagulls from the water and they were just all black and they were covered with this tar. And we take them to this little station where you'd bathe them with mineral oil, which takes off the oil and stuff like that. But then I was thinking, you know, it would take like, you know, 3 hours to save one bird. There's like millions of birds dying of natural causes elsewhere. And there's maybe a realization about how much of a friend we can be to others. And not only that, in the course of helping others, oftentimes we do the opposite because we don't know exactly how to help others. So Krishna's the friend. If we promote him and align people with Krishna, then that's helping them in the best possible way. Oh yes, Shraddha.
So Maharaj, I had a comment and a question.
A comment and a question and a little more volume on the microphone, which is green mic.
So Mukhman, I really liked your point where you said that one has to be sinless to get the determination to do devotional service. And I was thinking that even Krishna says anagha to Arjuna and doesn't give him the knowledge about devotional service. He gives him only because he's sinless.
Yeah,
like that, he says that.
Nice point.
Yeah. And my question was about the quotas. So is the concept of quota only for material things, or is there like a, you have a quota for doing service? Because sometimes we might even try to hog, you know, and do too much service beyond our capacity. So is there like a concept of a quota there? Or?
Yes, there is a concept. In the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna says, Sve sve adhikarya nishta saguna parikirtita viparya tu doshasyad etarior eva nishchaya, is a fixed principle that one should do service according to one's natural capacity, or adhikari, one's qualification. And if you do that according to what you can do now, then that's a good quality. And he says, viparya, the opposite is true, to dosha said, it's a fault if you try to do more than you're qualified for. So that's a kind of sense of quota, and it manifests sometimes in people's enthusiasm to do more service than they're qualified for. For instance, in the time Prabhupada was here, I saw several times when we went to India, people would break off from our yatra. And we had a few hundred devotees that used to come to Mayapur at that time. And sometimes people would then, we'd go to Mayapur and then Vrindavan. Mostly we'd take the train up there. And Prabhupada would be there both places. And then sometimes, I remember in Vrindavan, sometimes neophytes would then just move to Radhakund. They'd break away from the yatra and they'd say, I'm going to sit in Radhakund and chant Hare Krishna 24 hours a day. Somebody asked Prabhupada if they could go to Radhakund. And Prabhupada said, and they weren't qualified. And Prabhupada said, no, there's already enough monkeys in Radhakund. We don't need any more monkeys sitting out there. But it happened a lot. You know, people would try to do that. This is, there's a verse in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, which is an important verse, which says that Shadhan vitana shunuyadat ataya vikriditam rajabhadur birahamcha vishnur Shadhan vitana shunuyad atavarna yedya Bhaktim param bhagavati pratilabhya kamam hridrogam ashvapahinot yacharina dhira. This verse is an important verse about how if one hears the pastimes, the playful pastimes of Krishna with the young gopis of Vrindavan, then one can overcome the dread disease of the heart, lust. But then it says, Shradhan Vito, you have to be qualified. Your faith has to be at a certain level. Otherwise, Prabhupada made comments, you know, he'd see pictures that people would, who weren't qualified, they'd put up of intimate pastimes between Radha and Krishna. And he would object to that. He said they should put up a picture instead of Krishna as the supreme controller of the universe. That's the level that they should start. That's their quota, their adhikari, where they can start. Of course, Prabhupada gave Krishna a book, which described all these things, but he couched it in the philosophy so that people could understand. That was his unique contribution, that he was able to do that for so many people. But still, even within that, people had, in Los Angeles, when the Chaitanya Charitamrita come out, realized that there were all these intimate pastimes and esoteric philosophy, and they started groups there to focus only on that. And they had the idea that now we'll advance much quicker than everybody else because we're not going to read Bhagavad Gita and all those lower things. We've graduated. And we're going to only concentrate on Krishna's pastimes with the gopis because that's the rasa we want, and so forth. And Prabhupada pointed out the folly in that they weren't qualified for that. One has to qualify oneself and then naturally come to that point, which is pointed out by Rupa Goswami, Tanama Rupa Charitari Sukirtananu.
Kamina.
Go ahead, make a mistake. Just keep saying it.
Tanama Rupa Charitadi Sukirtananu Smrityo Kramena Rasana Manasi Niyojya Tan
Tishtan
Tishtan Vrajetad Anuragi Jananugami Kalam Nayet Akhilam Ityupadesha Saram.
Excellent. Well done. That, here he's talking about a gradual process, and that begins with sufficiently hearing and chanting. And so that's there. One may also find that, you know, you take on so much service, or service that's not, that you become overwhelmed by so much that it becomes, you become less inspired and not more. So you have to be careful to balance your service and make sure that you're doing it, you're not doing so much that you're overwhelmed by it all and you can't handle it. Okay? And was that it? Question, comment? Okay. Yes.
Hare Krishna. Well, as a lot of times, devotees in general, I'm sure everybody gets asked by the people around, like, what is Krishna consciousness and what is Hare Krishna, what is ISKCON, what is devotion. So, this is a reflection that I've seen. What happens is people in general are not used to the idea of giving love to Krishna or giving anything to Krishna. When we talk about going to temple, mostly in Indian context, people go to ask something for their immediate need or wants, I would say, and then immediate wants, family, extended society in general, you know, as Prabhupada explains in his purports. But that's all personal or extended requirements, people ask for it. But when it comes to Krishna consciousness, people don't know that this is something we have to give to Krishna, which is, Krishna is the overall bhoktaram yajnatapasam, he's the overall enjoyer, receiver of all the things. At the most, people think of giving is, okay, we give some leftover change in the pocket, that's we give in the temple, that's all. But there is even more beyond that, which is the love and affection we can offer to Krishna with all our offerings.
Yeah, well, this is something Krishna points out himself in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. He names he names progressive steps to come to the point that you're talking about of offering something with love. That's not, in one sense, it's natural because it's inherent in the living entity to want to love Krishna or to love Krishna. Or to want to love him. However, that gets perverted into love for matter instead. And then identify myself with my body. I think the body is the self, and therefore I love the body and everything in relationship with the body. So it's not absolutely natural for people. And they don't learn, generally, people don't learn unmotivated love for God. In religious practices, there's a lot of give and take, like, what can you do for me? Oh Lord, won't you buy me a color TV? So Krishna says, if you're not at that stage, then you should practice the tenets of bhakti yoga, sadhana bhakti, so you come to that point. Because as Prabhupada describes in the Nectar of Devotion, if you start the process of bhakti yoga, even though you don't have spontaneous love for Krishna, if you hang around devotees and you come in the room and everyone's making garlands and they're very enthusiastic about it, it's like, what are you doing? It's like, why don't you sit down and find out? You can help us. And then, you know, you could also come and see the deity in the morning, and you can offer something, or you can learn to dress the deity. And then after a while, you start getting attached to it, and it becomes more spontaneous and natural. This happens in natural progression. So some people can't do that. So Krishna says, then, if you can't do that, then what you should do is you just work, because you're going to work anyway. And when you get some money from your work, then give some of it to Krishna. And, you know, you can give it to Mayapur Bihari, because he'll use it to buy Gitas and put them in hotels and hospitals. Right? And then that gives you, you know, you're giving somewhere. So Krishna says, start there. Then he says, you may not be able to start there. Your family might object, as an example. They might say, don't give any money to Maya Brihari. I don't want to give to Hare Krishna, you know. So then Krishna says, okay, if you're in a tight spot like that, he said, try to give it for some good cause. Give it away somewhere, voluntarily, because from that you'll grow. It's the beginning of something. And then he gives another verse, which I've never understood, even after reading every commentary on it. He talks about all different kinds of ways, meditation, surrendering the fruits of results and things like that, as entry level to come to the point of loving Krishna. So it can be a long road for people, coming from not being trained that there is a God that's a person. In fact, most people get this weird information that God's impersonal. Even in India, this is very prevalent. They just think God's impersonal, there is no God. They have a hard time relating to the deity. And people don't learn about deity worship. In the West, they don't learn about it. So deity worship to them, because they come Judeo-Christian backgrounds and Abrahamic religions, you know, they have this idea if there's any form of God, run the other way. Or, they have a visceral reaction to it. They're like, oh my God, that's an idol or something like that. They don't know the science. So how are they going to come and offer something to Krishna? So there have to be lots of entry-level ways that people can then be in the association of devotees and learn, you know, how to begin giving and then gradually come to the point of loving God. I had my own experience. You know, I had read all kinds of spiritual books before I got Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. You know, I understood then about Bhagavan and Krishna and everything like that. I understood there was a supreme person. But when I came to the temple, I couldn't even see the deity, because I had no training whatsoever. I had not heard anything about it. I could relate to the flowers, though. So when I'd look at the altar, it's like, wow, the flowers, that's God. And then gradually, after hearing and being in the association of devotees, then I could understand how Krishna was manifest in his deity form. So it's no wonder. The material world is a very convoluted place with a lot of ideas. And to get the bhakti idea requires association with pure devotees. And when one gets that, then one can recover rather quickly. Satam prasangam mamavirya samvido bhavandi hritkana rasayanaka tajjoshana rashua pavarga. Very quickly it can happen in the association of devotees that one recovers from impersonalism or from materialism. There's a lot of isms in the material world that one then comes to this point. It's like, oh, I want to give Krishna something out of love. Like these festivals we have. Isn't it heartwarming? You see all these people, they just drop everything and they come to a festival like Gaur Purnima. I mean, who knows about Gaur Purnima? These are special people that come here. They're not all of you. I mean, there's all of you come to everything because you're on that level. But, you know, you see people that come, or they come to Ratha Yatra once a year. I mean, bless their hearts. They come to see Lord Jagannath in the cart. Who are these people? They're special souls that come and you know, they really get something from it. This is a powerful kind of association to be around people like that who just came to see Lord Jagannath pull his cart for 2 minutes. So you have to be in that kind of association, rarefied atmosphere for the heart to change and to really want to give something to Krishna. It's just the most auspicious day of one's life when that spontaneous feeling awakens even a little bit that I want to do more service for Krishna. And it's not based on any kind of selfish idea. There were a couple more reflections. Yes, Prabhu. He'll get you a mic. It's just now coming. Please be comfortable. We guarantee a microphone if you stay in your seat in 7 seconds or less, or your money back.
Prabhu, I was actually listening to some Srila Prabhupada's videos on YouTube.
Yes.
And at one in one of them, he basically negates the idea of, like, you know, wasting time and economic development and, like, trying to, you know, remove poverty and things like those. Mm-hmm. He basically says, like, you know, devote your time to bhakti, which is much better way of mm-hmm. serving Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, I mean, if there is hunger and poverty right in front of you, I mean, you go to temples in India, you'll see lots of people outside the temples. And when I was growing up in India, I was always struggling. Like, you know, if there is a God, then there was so much pain and suffering right outside his home. You know, God lives in that building, so why is there so much pain and service, suffering in outside, right outside the building? So my question is, like, if you were to elevate some of that right there, will that not count as service to Krishna? Will not be a good way of showing devotion to Krishna?
Well, first of all, I question your premise, because I mean, I'm not sure which temples you're looking at, but any temple I've gone to in India, everyone's having a big party. And you go to Tirupati, they let anybody in and they'll feed you. And, I mean, for certainly going to any Hare Krishna temple, they'll feed you. And, I mean, I remember as a brahmachari, I didn't have any money at all. And I just travel all over India on trains. And I go to the temple and they just fill you up and give you prasadam. And you know, Hare Krishna devotees and Vaishnavas in general, Vaishnava temples all over India, are famous for, like, feeding people. Like, everybody gets to eat. So the thing is that you really can't solve the various problems in the material world, like the hunger problem, by doing it piecemeal. It has to be done in a systemic way. Of course, if you see somebody who's hungry and you offer them something, of course it's a noble act. But if you put all your energy into that and declare that this is our main cause, ending hunger, then this is a losing battle, because it's not really possible to eradicate it. Just like eradicating disease. If you start naming the various diseases that are available to us in the world, start with A and then go to B, C, D, we'll be here all night. And once one's down, the other ones will come up. So there's that. And there's another sense in which people, when they start to do these kind of philanthropic types of things, feeding the world and stuff like that, they generally use all kinds of resources that are harmful to other living entities. This is something Srila Bhaktisiddhanta pointed out, that people who start philanthropic organizations and feed people, then they go kill poor animals to feed other people. Of course, your question was, you know, what's the harm in helping somebody out? But that's the natural life of a devotee anyway. Whenever devotees go out, they're always thinking how to do good for others. They'll give them knowledge first and foremost. Even Jesus said that. You can feed a man a fish, or you can teach him how to fish. As a general metaphor for this idea that, you know, what are you going to do to actually help a human being? People nowadays, I see a lot of people beg along the street and they'll put up signs. They'll say, you know, I need a beer, please donate. They make more money than the other people who just sit there, because everyone says, oh, that's kind of cute, and, you know, he should drink, you know, it'll help him. And that's charity in the mode of ignorance, because will it really help him? And if you give money to somebody who doesn't know what to do with it, how does it help him? And if you give food to a hungry person who doesn't know how to care for him or herself, then how in the long run did you eradicate hunger or help anyone? So there's a sense in which that, you know, really helping people has to be done from a very intelligent point of view. You have to see what the ultimate cause of their suffering is, and who they are also. Are they the body, or are they something else? And then start from the root level to help people. There have been a lot of people that have come to the Krishna consciousness movement who were really disoriented and not able to take care of themselves, who adapted to the life of Krishna consciousness quite nicely. Other ideas or reflections? Yeah.
You mentioned that satisfying Krishna senses satisfies our own senses. So I was just wondering, is there like a, how does Krishna say how his senses are satisfied?
How he's satisfied?
How he's satisfied to the utmost.
Yeah, how his senses would be satisfied? Yeah, there's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhaktya priyachati taraham bhakti paritam ashnami paritatmanaha. If you offer me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I'll accept it. In other words, he'll accept the offering, and if he does, he feels satisfied by it because it's offered with love. As I said earlier, Prahlad Maharaj points out that Krishna doesn't really need anything from us, but what we can offer him is love. And if we offer our love, then he'll feel satisfied. It's pretty much true with any living entity. Like, you know, let's say you have a roommate. And, do you? Okay. Let's say you had a roommate. And you know, the roommate, you give him an apple. And let's just say you do it really nonchalantly and you kind of just throw it at him as you're walking through. Or, you know, I mean, even if you're giving the apple, how satisfied would he be? Or you'd walk through and stop and give you full attention and say, you know, you're the nicest roommate I've ever had, and I bought you this apple and I'd like you to have it, and it's coming from my heart. I mean, which is going to be more satisfying? Turns on your roommate? If you're living with a caveman, ooga ooga. Thank you. Yeah, if you live with a caveman, he'd like it more if you throw it at his head. In which case, you can do that. So, Krishna accepts the offerings we give him according to the intention that we have in our hearts. To offer him something. There's a whole science of, you know, the world of bhakti yoga means we have what we call padatis that describe how to offer things to Krishna in a way that he'll appreciate them. For instance, when one gets into the refined science of deity worship, the devotees understand, and not everyone's allowed to go in and directly worship the deity. You have to go through phases of development in Krishna consciousness and to come to that point, to be deemed civilized, and not just civilized, but also purified and enlightened, you know, to approach the deity, have a certain amount of knowledge of what you're doing and appreciation for the deity. Otherwise, not everyone can just walk in and do that. And within the instructions of how to worship Krishna in his deity form, there are a lot of suggestions about exactly how to do that. For instance, one should be clean when offering in the temple, and punctual, and reverent in offering things, and offer it in such a way that it's in line with the instructions of how to offer. And that's the beginning stage of developing more spontaneous love. Somebody else had a point? Yes. Oh, sorry, you were about to go? And even with your new notebook, sorry. Okay. We'll come to you next. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I had a question. I had a question on why do insecurities come? Like, although there are so many scriptural instructions on how we are part and parcel of Krishna, there is still, like, although I know it, I'm not able to understand it. Or how do I eliminate?
What I've found is that insecurities arise in my life due to lack of hearing, insufficient hearing. If I'm hearing my japa really well, and I also hear sufficiently from Srimad Bhagavatam as an example, then the kinds of insecurities which arise from really identifying myself with the mind and body, they tend to diminish. And even when they do arise, I have the strength to overcome them. So all kinds of disturbances in the mind can be quelled by being consistent with one's hearing and chanting, and taking a little more if you can, taking more opportunities to hear and chant in the association of devotees, should help that situation a little bit. There's more to be said, but that's one definite mode. Yes, Apramea?
First of all, thank you, Maharaj, for the notebook. I have 2 points. One is, you mentioned about how you respect or offer a silent prayer to Bhumi Devi every time you wake up. And then you said that how she, in Bhagavatam, says that she was astounded by human stupidity by saying that they control this this part of the land, etc. And then you said that we should understand that who we are in respect to Krishna, and then knowing that is sanity. Okay, and the second point is, you were talking about subtle body transmigrations. I have a question about that. Do our habits also transmigrate from body to body?
Yes, they do, because we see that people have, you know, this is part of our, what we call our prarabdha karma. People are born with certain tendencies. These tendencies indicate my involvement with the modes of material nature in previous lives. And therefore, I may also have a certain combination of genes and a makeup of, as we discussed, this Shrotram, Chakshu, Sparshanam, Cha. This is describing sort of in a categorical way in which I get a group of senses, but it includes the other prarabdha karma or fully manifest karma that I have. For instance, there are certain genes that predispose people to certain kinds of habits. This has been proven in the world of addiction. Certain kinds of people that come from, well, they have sort of addiction genes, and other types of habits may be there. And that's part of the carryover, according to Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, from my last life. The whole situation that I get, the whole package that I get. It's your bucket coming back to you off the truck. See, notebooks are good, right? Collect them. Trade them with your friends. I noticed that I always carry, at least lately, this yellow notebook I had. I got it at the airport in New Jersey. And it's really been my friend. Notebooks are our friends. And I had this, this interesting phenomena. A good idea will come into my mind, and I'll think, I'm too lazy, I'll get it later, or I'll get it in 2 minutes. And in 2 minutes, it's gone, and I'm really kicking myself. And it never comes back. And I realize the only way to catch it, you got to have an idea catcher always ready there. Pen's got to be ready to go, glasses, the whole thing. I mean, now I feel it as one of my most important disciplines is whenever I get an idea, it's either that or I have a notebook in here too, because if I can't carry this big one, and I have to catch it. Otherwise, it'll get away. Even if it's 2 words or 1 idea, can go a long way. And so catching ideas, I don't know, for me, it's become very, really important. It's good to have a notebook on you. It's an external storage device. Nowadays, a lot of people are going back to analog, even in external storage. I remember when the first electronic devices came out, and I tried to use them. They were really clunky at that time. I tried as hard as I could, but I couldn't really get a message written down there as fast as like writing it down. But nowadays, one of the problems is there's so many programs. You know, you get started with one program, and then you'll see a billboard and say, "Nah, forget that. This is the only one." You start another one, and pretty soon all your information's splayed out. But if you just go back to the notebook, which a lot of people are doing, I don't work for the company or anything like that. I'm just telling. it kind of helps to write things down. I was talking to Giriraj Maharaj. It's our tradition every year after that Mahagaur Purnima. We get together on Saturday night and talk about a lot of things. And he was telling me that Prabhupada told him, he said, you should write your main business. Your first and main business should be to write. What a nice instruction to get, huh? And so we were talking about the importance of writing and how it clarifies your mind when you write things down, especially, you know, if you're dealing with a progression of ideas. If you take the time to write them out and then refine it, writing means refining, really, and rewriting. Writing means rewriting. You got to keep rewriting, and when you do it, you grasp the concepts more completely in your mind, and you're able to represent them in more coherent ways when you write. So it's important to write things down, and write your thoughts down. What do you think? I have a few more notebooks here. Anybody didn't get one afterwards. Okay, we have Srivas Pandit, and then coming back up to Shraddha. We get a microphone to you. What's that? Your notebook. He's wearing blue, so let me get a blue one here.
And how about this?
This is not an exact match, but it's as close as I have. Now, we all want to see the ideas that go in that notebook, right? Hare Krishna. Okay, and now...
One more notebook, sir.
Yes. Blue for you, green for you. Green?
Yes, for me also.
I'm trying for it. I think I have it, but I have to unpack it.
Change your sweater.
Green. Shraddha, you had a point? Before there's a stampede? Okay. What's that from the internet? Question from the internet.
This is Gopal Champu Prabhu from New York.
Gopal Champu.
So, Hare Krishna, dear Guru Maharaj, thank you for the class. My question is, should one learn how to become satisfied in whatever service they are currently in, tolerating any difficulties?
Yes. In fact, satisfaction is the austerity of the mind. And we read the other day in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that's from the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says in the 17th chapter that one of the austerities of the mind is satisfaction. You have to practice it. And also, we read in the 10th canto just recently that one purifies the mind through satisfaction. The mind is purified through satisfaction. Satisfying one's service, yeah, it's important. 18th chapter of the Gita, Krishna says if you give up your service because it's troublesome, then it's renunciation in the mode of passion, and you don't get the fruit of anything. You abandon it. So it's good to feel satisfied. Of course, if you adjust your service at a particular time with good guidance, especially from your mentors and authorities, that can be done also. A Prabhupada adjusted people's service all the time according to their levels of according to the different stages of life they're in and also what he needed at a particular time. So that is altogether possible as well. Yes. Radhakripa Prabhu.
Maharaj, I have a question. In some sampradaya, I heard that they follow the bhava. They think that Krishna is a small baby and they feed them, they worship them in a bhava form. They think if they can fake it, they will make it.
Uh-huh.
Is this the right understanding that by faking, you can still make it, you enter into state, into bhava stage, because they follow it pretty rigorously in that mood, though?
It's not the kind of advice that Krishna gives, as I mentioned earlier. It's better to accommodate one's particular nature and qualification for doing service and develop by association and hearing a natural attachment to a particular way of worshiping Krishna rather than faking it. So this is an idea that some people have, that you can just suddenly imitate the activities of an advanced devotee. One of our acharyas, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, used to say that such imitation was like a new bride. She wants to have a baby right away. And then she happens to be at the hospital in the maternity ward. So she hears a mother giving birth in the other room. And there's she's crying out in pain. Like, I guess, you know, it's demonstrative. She can hear it from the other room while she's delivering the child. So the young woman goes home, and then she starts making the same noises. And it's like, what are you doing? It's like, I'm going to child. The child doesn't come from your imitation of the symptoms that somebody else has, but it actually comes from conception. And the conception comes from hearing in the association of pure devotees, as evidenced by the birth of Krishna. In the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we see that Krishna first appeared in the mind and then the heart of Vasudeva, and then was transferred to the mind and heart of Devaki. And this, our acharya said, is the meaning of Diksha, that bhava is transferred from the heart of a pure devotee into the heart of the disciple, and it happens by service, surrender, and hearing. And it's not a matter of picking up a Krishna doll and carrying around all day and then making an imitation of that. There, you know, of course, we don't like to judge anybody. We're just saying what Krishna says in the Shastra, but the fact is that, you know, this imitation is something that, you know, if somebody may be very advanced and show some inclination towards worshiping Krishna in a certain way, so we're careful about judging people, who they are, what level they're at. But just as a general principle you're asking about, that's what the Shastra says. Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Oh, by the way, you sent me the Bengali stuff, right?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
It's how to write Bengali. I noticed the need for it in Vrindavan, especially, or in Mayapur as well. You got to read things in Bengali when you're around Gaudiya Vaishnavas.
So, Maharaj, my question is how to remember whatever we hear when required, and how to put them in practice?
Well, practice could come first, and one of the best practices is to repeat what you hear, because there's Shravanam and then there's Kirtanam. When you hear sufficiently, then you'll be able to speak sufficiently. And if you speak what you hear, you teach it to other people, it's one of the best ways to learn. I had a godbrother, he passed away. His name was, what was his name, Navina? He's from America, but he spent a lot of time in Russia. He's a very good scholar. Died about 10 years ago. Anyway, I hadn't seen him in many years, since the 1970s, when he joined the Radha-Damodar bus. And I was really surprised at how eloquent a speaker he had become, and he had written a couple of books and things like that. So I went for a walk with him, and I said, how'd you get so advanced anyway, and speaking and writing and so forth? And he said, from teaching. He said, Purnachandra, yeah, thanks, Purnachandra Maharaj. And so he said, he's constantly in teaching mode. And when you teach Krishna consciousness to others, then it'll force you to be prepared to remember things and to imbibe them in the first place. So that really helps. And they'll also ask you questions that you can't answer, and then you got to go research it and find out for the next time. So that's one way that really helps, is to be a teacher. Yes.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Guru Maharaj, for nice class. I just have one small reflection that I like the point that you said that Krishna can accept everything what we offer him, as much we can offer, as much he can accept. Because I noticed that there can be good intention in person, and he or she, he offers something to the, usually to the people, the person, and he gives, and then this person or this people coming to this start thing that actually he wants something from them. But even if it's good intention, just from out of good heart. But if you offer to Krishna first, afterwards you will give even prasadam, right? We offer food to Krishna first, and then you give this prasadam to people, not to get out of them something, but to try to help them. Like you have this idea that it will purify them. And you give not out of your desire to get something.
Yes, it's a good point. And that is the basic principle that the devotees follow, that whatever they use, they first offer to Krishna. Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about how everything that he has in his life, he takes as the remnants from Krishna, including all his clothes, his silverware, everything. Whatever it is, it's first Krishna's, and then he uses it as a remnant. And when you give it to other people, they get benefit from that. Yeah. Now we're going to chant a little bit more before the hour of 8 comes up. Yes? Yes, another question. We need an IT person. There you go.
Prabhuji, actually this is off-track question which I always had in my mind from very long time. Just wanted to reveal that question. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he said we opened the marketplace of holy name Namahatta, and you have to pay faith to take the name, and it's like a business, and also your book is like our family business. So because I'm coming from a business class of people, and especially in our class, we don't take devotion or devotional activities as business. And it is like, we don't trade anything. Like, it is very personal. And business is something which external people, which we get. So when I have always this question, like, why Bhaktivinoda Thakur has said this personal relationship of Krishna and holy name as business, and also distributing books is like, it's very personal for me, and why you have named the book our family business? I mean, I don't understand. Maybe my understanding is I have different view of term business. Can you please elaborate, like, how can I understand that something else, not like business?
Sure. Well, you have to, when you see the description of, or read the description of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you'll find that Kaviraj Goswami describes him like this, as the greatest spiritual capitalist. So he gives this model, because actually marketing is a special kind of science. It requires quantitative and qualitative reasoning skills. Quantitatively, you have to measure market share, and you have to see where the break-even point is on your product. And qualitatively, you have to see what it is that attracts people to take it. You think very deeply about how to brand it and so forth. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Ananda are opening the marketplace. They opened the marketplace first because their idea was that everyone has to get this. The modern day marketing is sort of an imitation of this. It's substandard because nobody really has the product that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has. They advertise that everything, like Coca-Cola, what a scam. I mean, no offense to red-blooded Americans everywhere, but it really is, it's a real fake out. They have the logo that says Coca-Cola, and it's got some drops coming off it, like you know, it's supposed to be satisfying. And also the image of Coca-Cola is very, it's meant to be indicative of the American spirit or something like that. When you see a Coca-Cola, you think, oh, that's an American thing. That's why people drink it. It tastes terrible. And it's not even good for you. But they market it as Coke is the real thing. You probably already missed that one because that was back in the 60s or 70s. And then there was Coke is it. And there are songs people sing about Coke. Really. You know, they'll have songs where all these people, they'll spend millions of dollars to get somebody to sing a Coca-Cola. They do some kirtan to, you know, advertise it. That's the fake business. The real business is to distribute the holy name. Now, why do we call it a business? Because that's the way that the material world works, and that's what people understand. If you give away for free, as an example, people don't value it. They just think, oh, like, what is this useless thing? But if you present it as, like Prabhupada used to say, if you get the best mangoes in the world and you go door to door, and you say free mangoes, people say, get out of here, kid. Mango means man, go. No, go. But if you go around and then you say, these mangoes, they're $10 each, and people, oh, $10 mangoes. So this is the qualitative reasoning skill of Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was always thinking how to make sure that all the people of the world get this. That's why he was a grihastha, and he had long, beautiful hair, and he wore these flowing, you know, garments and everything like that, and everybody loved him. I mean, he was the most attractive person in Navadvip. And then he saw a certain class of people, they weren't appreciating him, so he went different branding. He went off and cut off all his hair and took the sannyasi thing, like, because that was a new brand that he would present to the world, because he knew that was, at that time in history, people would come and take it from him. And so he was always calculating how to make this available. Vyasadeva also, you know, the Vedas are there, and then he came out with the Mahabharata and the Itihasas, so that people would be attracted to reading the knowledge and thinking like it's a story form. So what is the logic behind that? It's what Prabhupada used to say, when you have some medicine to give a child, the child won't take it. So then what do? You say, I'm going to give you a candy if you take this. Or, you know, it's like, here comes the airplane. You know, like... You know, you have to find some way to attract them. So people understand marketing, and not only that, when somebody gives something in return for that, you know, in a tit for tat, like a normal business, then it qualifies them to be able to appreciate it. Otherwise, they think it's not valuable at all. So there's a lot that enters into the idea of the marketing. But you can consider that all the other kinds of things that are being sold in the world, they're really, that's really the false marketing. The real marketing is when you can get something that will free you from birth, death, old age, and disease. And that's our claim. Coca-Cola doesn't claim that. Although they try to hint at it. There's a verisimilitude they try to present. That, like, you know, if you take this, you'll run on the beach, you'll have a beautiful body and stuff like that. They don't tell you all your teeth will fall out. They will. They don't tell you if you have coins that have become tarnished, you put them in Coca-Cola, it'll clean them. You can use it to clean metal. So the false advertising and marketing going on in the material world, we're purifying it by making the real business, which is to market the holy name. The price of one's faith is not very much. Well, of course, in one sense, it's the most valuable thing. But that's all that Lord Nityananda is asking. Just have a little appreciation that there might be something in this. And just as Prabhupada markets the Bhagavad Gita, in the very beginning he says, so you're about to read this book. Now, this is written by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If you don't believe that, then just for while you're reading this book, believe it. So he gives them a way that they can have faith, you know, while they're reading it so they can appreciate it. Go Premanande. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Vancha Kalpadrubhascha Kripa Sinabhavacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. And please forgive me for skipping out at this point. Hare Krishna.
Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, hey, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman.